podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Fix with me, Jamie Holm. It's been a good week to be a Red, with Liverpool going 2-from-2 in the Premier League whilst conceding no goals, and have now set themselves up nicely for the visit of the European champions Chelsea at the weekend. So tonight, we're going to look back at some of the key players from the Burnley game. We're going to look ahead to the Chelsea game. We're going to touch on some Monday night football nonsense. And after its successful debut last week, you'll be delighted to hear that we will be giving our winners and losers for the week again. So I think Gav and Phil in particular are looking forward to that bit. Now, joining me tonight, as you may have guessed, we have Gav, we have Phil, and we have Conroy. Lads, how are we? Great to have you on, Conroy.
Well, thanks for having me on. Pleasure to be here. I'm doing very good. And Gav was on the show last night, so two in a row and I'm buzzing. I'm doing quite well this week, but not as many shows as Gav, but I'll try and get there.
Is this your fourth show of the week now, Gav?
Yeah, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Absolute machine, mate.
Mm, yeah, I fucking hate it at this stage.
And it's funny, your Team Wolf-esque beard, you can actually see it growing with every night that you've been.
Yeah, I shaved 2 days ago. I've aged about 10 years since Sunday. But now it's just the way I felt this week. I'm not usually on that much. I'd usually be on Sunday, wouldn't be on Monday. Tuesday, I done something with Connor, but I wouldn't usually do it on a Tuesday, and I'm on this. So it's usually Sunday, Wednesday for me, and then looking after everything else in the meantime. But just the way it fell this week. Good crack, though, this week. Arsenal to come, can't wait.
Looking forward to it. Phil, how are you getting on, mate? You being kept busy in the work with the Paralympics, you were saying?
Yeah, started today. So, the Irish got to a couple of finals. Back in tomorrow. So yeah, like, do you know what, it's great. I was kind of away for most of the Olympics, so the Paralympics keep me busy. It's great when you come in the morning though and there's live sport on, because sometimes you're just looking back on stuff that happened the night before. So if the Paralympics wasn't on, I'd be talking about Arsenal beating West Brom 6-0, but there'd be a lot of live sport on in the morning. Actually, there's Thursday's always good as well. The golf starts up on a Thursday as well. You have Champions League draw tomorrow, so it's yeah, busy. That means the day flies by. Like, it's 2 o'clock. I leave the office at 2 o'clock, and it flies by once there's something going on, you know?
Living the dream there, though, mate. I'm selling ads for a living, and you're sat there watching sports and talking about sports. It's a hard life.
Thinking the same, Jamie. Thinking the exact same. I don't even mind my job, but that sounds fantastic.
I know.
And I'm just smoking and drinking cans, which I don't know if that's better than watching
sport. Only one night a week, Gav. One night. This is your one night.
One night a week, yeah. I only drink on shows one night a week. And Jamie has written it into the contract that it's on a Wednesday, which...
100%. Fine by me. Gav on the cans is the greatest version of Gav. So, I'm looking forward to getting to winners and losers just for that very specific reason. Mm. I'm on a nice bottle of red tonight, Gav. So, I'm definitely joining you. Right, so I want to start by just touching a little bit on the Burnley game. I know it's been touched on by other pods, but I wanted to get your thoughts. And I'm going to come to you first, Phil. You know, when you going into that game, I suppose everything was set up for a bit of a disaster. 12:30 kickoff, Burnley, the Burnley boys in town. You know, scars run deep maybe from last season and obviously what happened in that game. How were you feeling going into the game, and what did you make of the performance?
Going into the game, before my battery died last week, I was predicting a 3-1 win to Liverpool. Now, then it gets close, you see the teams and the game starts, and you think, oh, jeez, I forgot. Burnley just make this very uncomfortable every time they come to Anfield. Obviously, last season they won. The season before, they were the only team to get something from Anfield. You think of previous ones where Liverpool have had to dig deep. Remember the one where Emre Can scored a goal. There was the 4-2 as well, where Lallana started. It's always a tough game, and we know why. It's a physical game. Obviously, it's something that Klopp talked about after the game. I have no problem with teams throwing tackles in if they're fair tackles, but some of the stuff was over the top in terms of what Klopp said about wrestling. And I mean, I know some pundits have dismissed it, saying like Klopp's moaning, but if you actually look at some of the incidents, there was Matip got thrown off the ball, Jota got thrown off the ball, Jota got dunted in the back by Jack Cork off the ball, that kind of thing. So it's just one of those. I was texting you during the game saying that second goal, you need the second goal against Burnley, because if it's 1-0, it's uncomfortable. So it was great to get the second goal, and the manner of the goal, it's definitely. I saw somebody asking, what's the best goal Liverpool have scored this season? For me, it's not even a debate. That second goal against Burnley was top drawer. And yeah, I thought it was a decent performance. Again, it was good that Van Dijk got tested. And again, we saw that Liverpool were quite happy to leave two at the back. Just say to Trent Alexander-Arnold and Kostas Tsimikas, you go forward. The two lads will take care of Wood and Barnes. And that's promising ahead of this weekend.
I have to be honest, right? Whilst I agree that some of the tackles overstepped the mark, I am kind of on the thinking that for Burnley to come to Liverpool, like, Liverpool are better than Burnley, and that's not being disrespectful to Burnley. You know, if they try to go toe-to-toe from a footballing sense, 9.9 times out of 10, they lose against Liverpool if Liverpool play to the best of their ability. I'm okay with Burnley roughing Liverpool up a little bit. I didn't have too much of an issue with it. I think when it verges on the dangerous, you always know what you're going to get from Burnley's front too. I'm okay with them doing it, Gav. I mean, from your side, did you think it was anything out of the ordinary, or is it what you come to expect, I suppose, from a Burnley side?
Yeah, I get your point. And I guess Shawnee's point, he made it the same on Sunday. He likes the physical side of it. He's Burnley are trying to level the playing field a little bit. I think you've said that as well. You and Shawnee have been kind of vocal on this when we've spoken about it. But the thing is, Klopp didn't say that Burnley were too physical. Klopp made points to specific incidents. Yeah. You know, Jota gets picked up and flung on the ground, right? And then he gets barged in the back, like, which is just, he's waiting on a pass in the box to get barged in the back. But even aside from them, there's a lunge on Harvey Elliott down the right-hand side in the second half as he's heading towards the cop. And your man's off his feet.
He's horizontal off his feet.
And there's another one by Dan. What's the.
That wasn't spotted in the game, though. Spotted in the game. No. I just said that was a good tackle in the game. Eric Peters at the last minute on Harvey Elliott.
Was it Eric Peters? I thought it was Peters or it was.
Oh, no. There was the Jack Cork one on the edge of the box, which I'll be honest, like, I lived for tackles like that. So I can't stand there now and say.
No, there was another one where he's running towards the
cop. It was the left back, Taylor. I think it was Taylor.
Taylor. Taylor is over on the far side of the pitch as we look at it, if I remember right. And he's off his feet. And Elliot does well to avoid him. But there's another one where he's coming down the right wing, inside right. And he's running. And I think it might be Jack Cork or the other set of midfielder. And he's literally horizontal, a foot off the ground with his feet up trying to hit this young lad. And it's not because it's Harvey Elliott and he's only 18. It's the fact that, and that's where, listen, people can be physical. It's a physical game. We all call for that. We hate when we see the slightest touch and players going down and stuff like that. It's ridiculous. But some of the challenges there the other day for me were over the top. And Klopp was just turning around and going, listen, they're literally jumping head first into fellas in the box, right? At waist height with their head, or they're literally picking guys up and lifting them and flinging them. And it might sound a bit fucking childish or get over yourself, Gav, but that's what Klopp was pointing out. He's pointing out facts, and I hope Phil was using the word pundit very fucking loosely when he mentioned that he seemed to, you know, disregard this. He didn't disregard it. He didn't watch it. There's no way he watched it. There's no way a pundit would anything watch that game and said Klopp made reference to A, B and C, but I don't see the problem. Because what he made reference to was right in front of you. You know, it wasn't Klopp going, they were way too physical for the whole game. He literally said, they were performing wrestling moves on us at points. That's what he said. So, but look, who cares? We beat them. And I hope we absolutely hop off them when we go to Turf Moor as well. And I wouldn't mind seeing them going down, because that fella's starting to annoy me. He's starting to bug me in a big way, Sean Dyche. I used to like him. And I thought Everton should have been banging down his door probably 2 years ago when they were looking for a manager. But right now, he's just a whinger. You know, he's a whinger. He doesn't seem to talk about football anymore. He just whinges all the time. So, fuck him, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm not arsed talking about him anymore.
Yes, Gav on the cans. I love it.
No, it just annoys me. I'm sorry. I'll lighten up down a minute.
I like it, Gav. It's good.
I'm going to get devil's advocate then. Do you think other managers could do what Sean Dyche could do with Burnley and keep them up, though?
Oh, no, I don't think he's doing a bad job at Burnley.
I think he's doing an exceptional job. I think he is.
And I'm surprised he's still there, because there was massive problems there at the start of last season, if you remember. They were releasing players on him, and he wanted to keep Jeff Hendrick being one of them, I think, at the time. Hendrick ends up going to Newcastle. And I think he's doing a brilliant job, because I think they found the level where they're quite happy. 12, 13, 14, 15 in the Premier League. If you get that every year, Burnley are absolutely delighted with the size of the ground they have, the size of the club they are, the reach, you know, whatever they have and whatever size they are. I think he's done an exceptional job. I am surprised he's there, because I literally thought he was on the verge last summer over what the club are doing in a kind of cost-cutting exercise because of COVID at the time, if you remember. But I'm not knocking the job he's done. I just think he's starting to whinge week in, week out. He wins this week. He'll whinge when we play him at Tottenham as well.
It's funny. Phil makes a great point, and it was about overcoming challenges. And, you know, I like the physical side of the game, so I'm not going to moan too much of it. While some of it overstepped the mark, I absolutely agree. But Liverpool stood up to the challenge. Liverpool stood up to the challenge, not only at centre-back in terms of the physicality that was thrown their way, but also in terms of the direct balls. I thought that Liverpool... The one thing that really pleased me actually was the fact that we were so focused on trying to keep a clean sheet. And Conroy, that was one thing that struck me right at the end. It was Van Dijk throwing in last ditch tackles. It seemed to really matter to the back four and the keeper that they kept that clean sheet. And it's a real boost that we were able to.
No, absolutely. I think Thiago tried his best for us to concede in the last 5 minutes. He gave two passes.
Whoa. Let's not fall out.
No, I do like Thiago. It's ironic, though, because he actually, just before that, he kind of body swears someone and beats someone. And you're like, oh, outstanding. And then he obviously still a little bit, he's getting into the game. He gave two passes, kind of loose passes. And then Alisson again. Alisson is ridiculous. I mean, that's Norwich away last week and Burnley. If I'm correct, that was two late saves in the game against Burnley. What a goalkeeper. We're very fortunate to have him as well. But on the you talk about the defence, Jamie, I think it reminded me when Van Dijk said, I just love clean sheets. That's what it felt like towards the end, because I would say, we weren't lax or anything, but you do think there's a little bit of complacency in the last 5 minutes by certain players in the team. I'm only joking with Thiago, but I did feel that a little bit.
That's okay, mate. It's okay. Don't worry.
Yeah, I've said Thiago being the team of the year, so don't worry. I'm backing him. It was an off moment. He's fine. But I felt like, I've got to be honest, Van Dijk coming back, it's that aura, isn't it? It's hard to put into words. He brings something different. And Matip as well. Joe Matip is, I said to Gav, it was on it was the Fat Back Four last week. I think Matip might be my favourite footballer. He's just such a weird player in the best way. I don't know if you've seen that out of context, Matip. I just love him. I think he's magnificent, and I feel like if he could stay fit, he genuinely would be up there. I think he's outstanding. So They've been superb, and hopefully they can continue that on, and Matip can actually stay fit. If he gets past 5 games, I don't know what we'll do. We just bought Kanate, and he's not going to get a kick. So
yeah, it's funny. We've gone from basically getting the tea lady to play centre back to arguably having four or five top quality centre backs. It's funny how things move quickly in football, and I think you're right to call out Alisson, because I think he made an unbelievable save in the Norwich game. And the one thing that struck me against Burnley was he made big saves at big moments, but also his distribution with his feet. I thought he looked fantastic, and that I think it was Pep famously said, if you've got a keeper that's comfortable with the ball at his feet, it's having an extra outfield player. And Phil, if we're going to challenge Manchester City at the top of the table, having your big players like your Alissons, like your centre backs, it's our spine. If we can keep that spine together, it's going to do us the world of good.
Absolutely, yeah. And when you watch Alisson, he doesn't make what I would call eye-catching saves, because his positioning is so good that he's there in the right place. Think back to Anfield last season. Pogba's chance, and it looked like an easy chance, but Alisson was there, whereas other keepers, it just goes through. Look at the goal even United scored against Southampton at the weekend. That doesn't go through Alisson the way it went through Alex McCarthy. He's just such a presence. Even thinking back to the Norwich game, when Pukki goes through, imagine he's staring down the barrel at you and you just shit yourself and you knock it wide, or you don't do what you want to do, because he's just so big. And he just spreads himself, and he just causes strikers to panic a little bit. Whereas we've had goalkeepers in the past where you kick the ball at them and it just goes through them. So it's great to have him. And obviously, he's a tough. Yeah.
What a line. Love it.
Yeah, do you know what I'm thinking though, Phil? The exact instance, and I always think this, is Mignolet with Demba Ba. When Demba Ba ran through, like, he dived out the way of the ball. If that's Alisson, it doesn't go in.
Absolutely. And even, do you remember last season when Liverpool played Spurs at Anfield and Bergwijn went through? I still always think in my head, Alisson's going to save these. Now, he ended up hitting the post, but that incident, the Demba Ba one, I always refer back to that one. I think Mignolet was terrible for it. But if it was Alisson, I think he'd actually save that because said he's just that good. And obviously, when he's not there, he's a big miss. Luckily now, I think we've got to the stage where Quilín Kelleher steps in now instead of Adrian, and Liverpool fans are a bit more comfortable with that than they were when Adrian was starting games. And that's a credit to Kelleher for his performance at Ajax game. But the spine, as you said, you know, you've Van Dijk and Matip. I think Matip has to keep starting. As long as he's fit, you have to keep starting him because there is going to be a stage in the season, we know, where he won't be available, especially when it starts going midweek games. You won't be able to play him all the time. So now is the chance to play him. You've 6, 7 days, 8 days sometimes between games. So why not keep playing him?
Tim, just quickly about Alisson and Van Dijk and clean sheets. Shawnee was at the game and he was on the corner of the cop, in Anfield and Main Stand. And he said, like, the view he was getting of, like, Van Dijk hitting these raking passes and stuff like that was amazing. But he said, you know, they were trying to hold on to a lead. It was a 2-0 lead. It was last minute. I think it was injury time, I think, when Alisson makes that late save. Mm. But there's a block as well from Van Dijk on Rodriguez, I think. And he said, right, like, the noise of it when it hits off Van Dijk and the noise of the save, he said, like, Alisson has, like, wrists of lead, hands of lead. But he said the roar that they let after they make the save into the cop, they're roaring at people in the cop. You know, as if to say, yes, like, but it's a clean sheet. Like, they're literally celebrating it like it's a goal. And he said, Shawnee's biggest takeaway from the whole game was, great goals, good win. But he said the mentality of them was just top notch. Last minute, 4 minutes injury time, 3.5 minutes of that gone. Someone makes a block, someone makes a save. It's not going to make a difference anyway if it goes in. You're not going to have enough time to get a second one. But they're literally getting up and fist pumping and punching the air and shouting at people on the front row of the cop as if to say, like, you know, clean sheet, fucking brilliant. Like the other, like Mane and Jota up the other end scoring goals. And Shawnee was just blown away by the mentality of it.
But the hunger's back, Gavin. I think they've got a point to prove. And there was always, I think it was a Klopp quote. There's a lot obviously knocking around, but he said it a couple of years ago. This team are coming to take our points and we're not going to let them. And it kind of feels like Liverpool have got that little bit of fire back, you know, that's obviously driven them on to many successful trophies and things. So it's fantastic to see. And Gav, I want to stay with you because I want to talk about a player and the first player we're going to focus on off the back of that game, Trent Alexander-Arnold. He looks like a player that is super fit. Mm-hmm. He looks like a player, dare I say it, that looks like he's filled out a little bit. He looks like he's a little bit more athletic. You know, he looks like he's really enjoyed having a little bit of a break, although he would have been disappointed, obviously, to not be able to compete at the Euros. It looks like he's done him the world of good. He was up against a good player in McNeil, I'll be honest. I'm always impressed whenever I watch him, and I'm surprised that some of the top teams haven't come in for him, even Liverpool, to be honest, because I actually really like him. Bit of an old-school throwback to a winger, real direct, just an absolute pest. And he was getting the better at Trent a couple of times in the first half. But then you see the other side of Trent. And as you can see on the screen, shout out to Sam Maguire, who's been helping us with the graphics. You know, you look at the distribution of Trent. You know, we reference this a lot. It's like he's playing a quarterback role at fullback. But you're now starting to see him, you know, really start to open teams up. He's influencing the game higher up. You know, I think if you actually remember, right, Gav, we played Burnley last season and you've probably seen the worst of Trent in that they funneled the ball wide and he was just smashing balls into the box and they were getting blocked or they weren't getting there. Mm. He looks a lot more measured, a lot more confident, and he's finding some fantastic positions at the moment.
He is. Liverpool have drawn Norwich away in the League Cup, just to let people know.
Oh, okay.
Just if you're wondering why that's up on the screen, but Norwich away is the draw for Arsenal against got AFC Wimbledon, and I think there was United against West Ham was drawn, which was a good one. I done a thing on Monday night about Trent, and I titled the generational talent, and I'm nearly running out of words to say about him. You know, when I played football, I played sometimes at right back, I played right wing a lot, I played centre midfield a lot, you have it in your head what you want to do, you know. I would have considered myself as a player.
Oh, we are.
What I'm saying is, I would like when you're trying to think of someone's
mentality.
I'm not going to take out my medals. Don't worry about it.
But
I would have considered myself quite a, a creative player. You know, I liked creative football. And when you think, I'm 39 now, I don't fucking play football anymore. Like, I just watch it and think I can still play. But when you watch this fella, it's a pleasure to watch him. And you know what? He doesn't surprise me every week, but he nearly makes your jaw drop every week by some of the stuff he does. And it's very hard to explain. I tried to explain on Monday night. And I was, you mentioned Sam there, and he's given us the graphics and stuff like that. And I asked him for a comparison of Trent's touch map against Burnley this time, last season. And the big thing for me was Burnley deliberately pushed him down into 15 to 20 yards from the goal line in that area outside the box because you were looking for him to cross, you know. And he's a really good crosser of the ball. But when you have a packed defence, it's hard to pick anybody out. And you could see the amount of failed passes, as they're called. Well, they're not. He's putting them into good areas. But when you have Ben Mee and Tarkowski there, they're winning the vast majority of them. When you watch him there the other day, he's playing against Boyd McNeil, who's their best player. By a fucking country mile, he's their best player. And people will say he got the better of him a couple of times. He did. But that happens in football. Wingers will get the better of you sometimes, you know, whether it's just nick the ball ahead of you or catch you off balance a little bit. But as the game went on, he just turns into a dominant force in a game, you know. And while teams, other teams will be looking for the striker, the winger to do something. Where's our number 10? Where's our drive in midfield? We might have that. But then we have a right back that'll just go, I'm taking control of this. And when I take control of it, they're in shitloads of trouble. And I go back to what I said last week. Instead of giving the ball to your forward and looking for him to do something, you're giving it to your right back, your right full, and all them forwards ahead of him with the talent he has. It's such a dangerous proposition. It really is. And you know what? Trent has got bashed at times for different things, and Southgate's done him no favours. I can't fucking stand Gareth Southgate. But he comes through it and he learns. And if you look at that game against Burnley, he didn't allow himself to be pushed into the corner with the ball. He'd come back and he'd play it backwards. He was getting into positions inside right rather than outside right where he could be pushed out there. The second goal, like Phil said, is a brilliant, brilliant goal. And just watching him, Jamie, it's just a pleasure to watch. And people would call from to go into midfield, and there's no need, because what he does from right back is just phenomenal. Absolutely and utterly phenomenal. And his range of passing, his weight of passing, he hits a pass to Mane in the first half, cop end. Where the ball comes out to me, just rolls under the studs and clips this thing. And we're in 20 yards. Yeah. It goes up in the air and drops. How he does it,
Mane hits it over.
Start, and Mane shins it over. It would have been a brilliant goal. He's just a brilliant, brilliant player. He's filling out. He's learning all the time. Learning all the time. And you know what? I thought he was, if you go back to Old Trafford last season, he was, it was a joke what he done. As Shawnee would say, it was a joke at Old Trafford last season when we beat him. But he just gets better and better and better. And I said it on Monday, and I'll say it now, and if I'm wrong, I'd be shocked. He will go down as, for me, the greatest fullback that's ever played for Liverpool.
I'm not going to disagree with you there. And Conroy, I want to come to you because Gav raised a couple of points, particularly around the fact that he was able to pick up more of an inside channel position. And we did a little bit of work kind of analysing, I suppose, where he was able to get on the ball. We've got a couple of graphics that basically show... maybe it was a deliberate ploy from Liverpool to try and counter what Burnley did last time, which was to funnel him, as Gav said, get him to the touchline and get him hitting hopeful balls into the box. Liverpool seemed to use Harvey Elliott and Mo Salah to try and stay as wide as possible. And the fact that they were able to stay as wide as possible, what that meant was it occupied fullbacks and it allowed Trent to pick up more of an inside position. And that was, that opened up a whole new game for him. You know, he's not ultimately looking to go on the outside and whip balls in. He's able to come more inside. And as you can see on the graphic that's up on the screen, Harvey Elliott, who is meant to be playing right-hand side of a midfield three, maybe quite narrow, is actually occupying, like the coaches used to say, get chalk on your boots. He's staying wide. And what that allows Trent to do is pick up the balls in areas where he can influence. And Gav, if you go back actually to the pass map, you can see that we've circled an area where Trent was able to deliver a lot of his balls. And it was, if you want to call it that, Kevin De Bruyne area, where he's able to whip crosses in without basically fullbacks doubling up on him. Do you think, Conroy, from your side, this is something that we could potentially see more of, in that we're trying to not move him into midfield, still have him as the fullback, but try and have him occupy some of those positions that the likes of a De Bruyne would pick up?
Yeah, I do. But at the same time, I feel like by us doing that at the weekend and ironically putting Harvey Elliott, who everyone's obsessed with playing in the middle, and I agree he's very good there, but his best moment is literally... He's a gif that was seen on the internet for about 3 weeks, was him coming from the right, cutting in and having the shot that hit the bar. So obviously he can operate there quite well. And obviously we know how good Salah is. But I think that's great management and tactics, because now teams can second guess. If teams try to do that with Trent, there's an option where we can put Elliot and Salah out at the wide area and allow him to come in. See that pass, see the graphic you had up on that screen there? That's the pass Gav's actually talking about, because Mane makes a run and he just lands it. I know what you mean, Gav, it just kind of drops out the air. It looks like he's hit it too
up
hard.
The air and comes
drops.
Down in an instant.
And I think he's got a lot better at that pass, because I've seen him try that. I don't know if you remember Mo Salah, I think it's the year we won the league or possibly won the Champions League. It's against Bournemouth. I think he does that ball, Salah heads it, goes over the keeper. It's a bit wider, but he whips it like that. He's tried it for every game, or nearly every game he tries it, and it doesn't come off. But I feel like he's kind of perfecting it now. And to me, it just opens a different avenue. On the midfield, Jamie thing, I've got to be honest, I'm quite ruthless with this. Don't want him in midfield. It's a completely different game. I'm fed up with people telling me, oh, you can just nip in there. If that was the case, right, we'd all be Philip Lahm. That's not how football works, right? And it's just, for me, that just would be like wasting an opportunity. He's at right back. He's our playmaker. He can see the full pitch. He's out wide. He's not got someone up his back constantly in a midfield battle.
You can say arse, mate. It's all right.
I'm getting used to that. Some channels you can't. But for me, I just think it's like, nonsense is the wrong word. I understand, but I do not get the obsession, because I'm actually sick of hearing it now. He's a right back. Just focus on being the best right back in the world or ever. And with his numbers and he's, as you say, being a playmaker from that side, why would you want to change it? I don't understand it. And I feel like this new tactic, it allows us to be quite fluid at that area and allows him to come in the centre and, as you say, have the option for De Bruyne role, but also have the threat of going out wide as well. And let's be honest, Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't like a typical fullback where he gets the ball and smashes it past the opposing left mid or left back to whip it in. That's not really his game. He's measured. He'll go down the side and whip it, maybe when he gets half a yard. He's very, like, calculated is the wrong word. I'd say Robbo's more calculated, but I feel like Trent's got that. We know we compare him to David Beckham, but in the sense of he's always looking for different angles. And I feel like with that tactic, it opens up a great game. And as Gav said, teams last season just had the low block, and that was us sussed. And it kind of, through like their injuries, different reasons, it kind of, I think we got in our own heads a bit. With that new move and the goal we actually scored with Trent coming inside, I feel like it opens a different avenue, which is great, because it means other teams don't know what we're going to do. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing.
I've told this before on a podcast, so apologies if people have heard this, and it'll be the last time I mention it, because I played centre midfield my whole life, and then I had a new manager that came in at one of my last clubs, and he'd watched a couple of games, and he come to me the first training session and he says, you're going to play right back for me. And I was like, you what? Right? What's going on here? And he said, just give me one game. And he put me right back. And what he said to me was, I was awful in centre midfield when pressed, because as a centre midfielder, you receive the ball, you've got somebody up your back, you've got to turn out. It's difficult. It's congested. He moved me to right back, and it was like a completely different game. I could pick passes. I had time on the ball. And the reason was, and you said it perfectly, Conroy, everything is in front of you. Yep. You can see the whole view of the game. Why would you waste the vision of Trent Alexander-Arnold in a congested midfield area when 9 times out of 10 he's getting swarmed by the opposition? He's having to drop deep and try and turn before he can even hit a ping. The reason that he is so successful is because he has the whole game and the time to deliver the pass. So the idea that you would move him into centre midfield, I'm the same as you. I'm ruthless with this. I don't want to entertain it. You lose what Trent is if you do that. Phil, I want to come to you on another player now. And I was a little bit surprised to see him start, more so because of my fantasy football. I actually took him out of my team because I didn't think he was going to start. And that is Diogo Jota. Were you surprised that he got the start? What did you make of his performance?
I actually wasn't surprised. Just before we wrap up on Trent, Gav mentioned Gareth Southgate. The problem with Gareth Southgate is he doesn't know what to do with Trent. He doesn't know. So I don't think Trent is going to have this great international career, but he's going to go down, obviously, as a Liverpool legend. But that is just because they don't know how to manage him properly. They're looking at things that he can't do rather than things he can do. But as I said, actually, getting left out of the England squad obviously pissed him off and it's fired him up, and it's good for Liverpool this season. In terms of Jota, obviously completely different to Firmino. I actually think Firmino might get the nod against Chelsea this weekend just purely because he'll stand on Jorginho, and that's a tactic that Chelsea have struggled with before, where you pressurise Jorginho. With Jota, obviously, you look at his touches there, he obviously plays completely different to the way Firmino plays, but he's so ruthless and he's so good in the air as well. It's something obviously we wouldn't have seen that much at Wolves because he tended to be out wide. But I remember actually watching him play for Portugal in the World Cup qualifier against Serbia, and he scored 2 goals with his head, identical goals where he just pulled off the defender at the back post and he just was able to get in. And when the ball lands on his head, he knows where the goal is. I thought his header the other day was absolutely clinical. It was brilliant. And as well, if you look, just Tarkowski and Ben Mee, they had it all sussed out, and he just, that little bit of movement, and you could see how annoyed they were that he just got away from them. And he's a lethal finisher, and he's just a great addition to have. He's something different. So whether it's a completely different setup, obviously, when he plays. But there is obviously something as well. There's an option then you will see during games that himself and Mane will interchange. And when he goes out on the left, he's obviously got that ball carrying ability where he can go by defenders as well. We would have seen that in the Norwich game. So there is going to be spells in the game where you think he's quiet, but then he comes alive in the penalty area. So I think when we first saw him play for Wolves, we expected he was just going to be that kind of player that would play in the Mane role. But now we're seeing him being used differently for Liverpool. But he could also still play that Mane role as well. So he's a great addition. You could throw him out on the right as well. So he's been an excellent signing. He's exactly what Liverpool needed. And I think he's probably a player that Liverpool fans want another player like that before the transfer window closes, just to make sure all options are covered.
I'm glad you touched on a couple of things there, because I read it exactly the same, in that I kind of feel maybe I didn't know enough about Jota. I thought we were getting a certain type of player, but he's kind of surprised me in that he's a blend of strikers. So like you touched on it there, Phil, I think his movement has surprised me. He's got the ability to run at people. He's an absolutely deadly finisher. He's got a little bit of the, I don't want to say Aguero's or the Michael Owens about him, in that he can kind of drift out of a game, but then because of his tenacity and his ability to pick up smart places, like if you look, Gav, at the shot map, he's getting shots in the right areas. He's central to goal, 6-yard box, 18-yard box. He's picking up good positions, and that's where you ultimately want your striker to be. And if you look at the goal that he scored, and like Phil says, it was his movement. It was his movements and his ability to get in the half space between the two centre-backs. And he did the run on the blind side. They didn't even know he was there. That's the most impressive thing about it. And I think there was 3-4 examples of, I think he did it against Arsenal last season when he peeled off the centre-back and headed it in at the back post. There's been a couple more examples where he's done very similar. If you look at him, Gav, in terms of these positions that he picks up, is it going to be difficult to bring Bobby back in? Because ultimately, you just want strikers to score goals. And that was probably the one thing that was labelled at Bobby Firmino last season and maybe the last couple of seasons, is he doesn't take enough chances.
Yeah, I think with regards to Firmino, I think he's being managed. And I think that's right, because he just hasn't stopped playing football for about 6 years. So Firmino being brought in and as sub for the first 4, 5, 6 games is fine. And it's a squad game, so I don't really care Firmino plays or Jota plays, because that's what you want. You want those options where you go, yeah, he'll play and he's on the bench, or he'll play and he's on the bench, and you're confident in both. You know, I think there is an argument around Firmino and, you know, getting around Jorginho and disrupting them, and we have the players then to hurt him if we can, and we get on to Chelsea in a bit later. But Jota himself, we talk about Firmino being a facilitator to Salah and Mane. I think Jota's a bit like that as well, but he seems to get into dangerous positions at the same time. Like, if you look back at that Trent capture we're showing, where Jota's literally standing in a number 10 position while Mane's gone centrally and Salah's in central with him because Harvey Elliott's out on the right. So there's loads of rotation in the team on the field as it happens, you know, the sort of way in. Whereas you think a Jota, if he was an out-and-out goal scorer, would be going, Mane doesn't need to be there because I'll be there. You know, you have that instinct. And I think while he facilitates and while he drifts, and he drifts out of games, but you see him from the shot map, he takes a lot of chances. And he gets a lot of chances on goal, and he gets a lot of chances on target, and he walks goalkeepers. And I think he's been brilliant for us. And I think he's been a really good, you know, he's been really complimentary to what we have already. You know, whereas you'd look and say, get someone with real raw pace, or get someone that's 6'5". And he's just one of these. And when I watched him at Wolves, I thought he was a left winger in a 4-3-3. That's what I thought he was. And he looked quite good. And Wolves fans thought he was very hit and miss and stuff like that. But I think he's learned a lot of Liverpool, and it's a tough decision to make on Sunday or Saturday as to who you play. But I'm comfortable with either for various, you know, for different reasons, I suppose. I think Jota's more of a direct goal threat, but I think Firmino could absolutely disrupt them. And if he gets turned, he can hurt them with Mane and Salah. So, but overall, Jota, brilliant. And Phil said earlier, you sign someone, if you could sign someone like that in the next 7 days, 6 days, wherever it is, and you got someone in at that sort of price, that's not exactly the same type of player, but someone that can really help with quality and be a little bit different to what we have already, it'd be a no-brainer for me. But Jota overall, excellent, absolutely excellent, and you can't have any complaints with his goal return, his work rate. He's been top-notch for Liverpool since he signed.
I'm glad you said work rate, because that was one thing as well. I think he got the most tackles in the team on the day against Burnley. So it's, and I think Pep Linders has alluded to the fact that he's a pressing machine. So I think that's when you look at certain players and you think, do you know what, he's tailor made for Liverpool, and it certainly looks that way, because he's tucked to us like a duck to water. Comroy, I want to come to you on the last player that I want to focus on, and that's Jordan Henderson. There's been rumours today breaking online that it looks like he's signed that new contract. First of all, what a boost that is for the club to be able to tie your captain down to for the long term and put all that nonsense to bed.
No, absolutely. As I said, I wasn't. I do think it was a bit overreactionary. All the
online videos, overreactions. I can't believe it. Never.
I'd spoke to my friend, and I think I spoke to Gav as well, talking about this. I was very much like, switched it on, saw it, turned it off, it'll be fine. It's a quiet news day. And that looks like it's exactly the case. So imagine that. But I'm obviously great to have Henderson, if that's the case, signed up. The leadership skills are outstanding. I do think he actually gets slept on a bit as how good a player he is. He's obviously not at the level of Gerrard or, you know, top midfielders. But I do think his actual ability and his passing ability, I've always said this, I think I've said this a few times, it might not have been on the Day Trippers, but it does annoy me, because I think, I don't care what opposition fans think, but I do think they're definitely selective in their memories of Henderson. So I'll take two instances right here. Manchester City, when we won the league, you remember when Fabinho scores the goal early against Man City, then Salah to Robertson's cross. In the second half, it's early second half. Who is it who beats Kyle Walker down the right-hand side, right down the flank, crosses it in for Mane's goal? Jordan Henderson. But that doesn't suit the narrative. And then other instances, Chelsea, when we win the Champions League that year, when Salah scores that absolute unbelievable, the screamer, to make it 1-0 in that game, in a tight game. It's Jordan Henderson breaks in the edge of the box, chips the ball back post for Manny again to score a header. I just think he does get slept on for big moments he has. I don't think it all suits the narrative, but for me, outstanding, unbelievable leader. I'm going to be maybe not controversial, but I don't think Virgil van Dijk is as good a captain as I think Jordan Henderson's different, because to me, he commands and leads a whole team. Virgil van Dijk commands his defence. We've seen it in instances, with Virgil, where I think, yeah, great at defence. But for me, if you look at, I think, is it the win rate for Henderson, the percentage is ridiculous as well when he's in the team. Just outstanding to get that sorted, and then he can just, you know, hopefully play the rest of his career here, along with the other new contracts and Andy Robbo yesterday signing, Trent signing, and the rest of the squad. So, outstanding piece of business. But I've got to be honest, guys, it was always going to happen. I couldn't see anything different happening. I think it was just going to get sorted. So, yep, fantastic.
Phil, one of the things I'm glad Conroy mentioned about is passing, and sorry to be a pain, Gav, if you could just pull that pass map back up, because one of the things that stood to me, and I noticed it, and I'm glad that the data backs this up, is he seems to be moving the ball a lot quicker. And the lazy narrative, like Conroy says, is that Jordan Henderson passes the ball sideways and backwards. And I can talk with confidence that sometimes a game needs you to pass it backwards and sideways if you need to take the sting out of a game and manage a 10-minute block and just stop the opposition building up ahead of steam. But one thing that I noticed against Burnley was the tempo at which he moved the ball. So not just the long raking passes when you're playing against a low block, you need to switch the play to try and dislodge them, but the speed at which he moved the ball. And I think 30% of his 70 passes were first time. And his average, just to give you a bit of a benchmark for the last two seasons, was in and around 24-25%. So you can see that it was a clear tactic to move the ball quickly into the likes of a Harvey Elliott or get it into the front three. It just seems to me like he doesn't get half the credit. It just seems like people like to label him as a mouth on the pitch and kind of ignore his ability, not only on the ball, but also off the ball.
Yeah, like we obviously learned last season when there was no crowd that he talks on the pitch, and that's what you want from your captain. But I think going back to your point, a lot of people maybe remember the first version of Jordan Henderson at Liverpool, the Jordan Henderson that was on his way out, that was going to be shown the exit door by Brendan Rodgers. And then he comes, you know, he's talked about this. He said, you know, put the head down. And when I get my chance, I'm going to show that I deserve it. And then Klopp comes in, makes him his captain, raise a few eyebrows, and it's turned out to be one of Klopp's best decisions. Obviously, some of the signings have been excellent as well. But Klopp actually, I think, sees a lot of himself in Jordan Henderson, where, you know, he's the heartbeat of the team, but his attitude, like, you know, the pressure when you sign for Liverpool. Obviously, then Gerrard leaves the club. He gets the captain's armband. He's compared to Gerrard, but he's a completely different player to Gerrard. And I think once people started to see past that and realised that, you know, you got to look at what he does rather than what he doesn't do. I think that's a big problem that a lot of people make, or a mistake that a lot of people make, is they look at things that players can't do rather than what they do well. Because with this Liverpool team, all the things that the players do well, it's all complementary to the whole team. Sure, players have weaknesses, but it's about the other players maybe shoring up those weaknesses. But Jordan Henderson, we have seen him in the past as well. If Fabinho's out, he can play in that sixth role. And obviously, he plays in one of the eights now. And he's just been, his attitude, a game that actually I think back to was the title-winning season, Anfield, 2-1 against Tottenham. Mm. He gives the ball away for that early goal, and you could see he was livid with himself. What does he do? Rolls up the sleeves, gets on with it, scores a goal. Liverpool come back, win the game. And that's what you want. That he doesn't feel sorry for himself, and he just... And do you know what? I remember watching that game, and there was a few people saying, geez, Henderson's he's off to a shocker. I'm thinking, geez, he won't last much longer. He'll be taken off.
He didn't hide.
No, and he never does. And there was no way he was going anywhere. Again, this was just a nice little one to throw out there. He's got 2 years left in his contract. There was no rush, but it was a nice one off the back of Gini Wijnaldum leaving. But Klopp was never letting this happen, because you would imagine Jordan Henderson has not only a long future at Liverpool as a player, but I'd be very surprised if he's not involved with the coaching staff in the future as well. I kind of see him and James Milner earmarked for some sort of roles. Maybe they go away and they learn their trade somewhere else and they come back. But yeah, he's been brilliant. And I thought, yeah, there was a few times where he just switches the ball to Tsimikas on Saturday, and it's great to see him back. And again, you know, it wasn't the greatest Euros for him. He was carrying an injury going into it, but he is going to be crucial to Liverpool. And that spine, as we talked about, that, you know, the two centre halves, the likes of Fabinho, Henderson, it's Alisson as well. If Liverpool are going to win the title, that is what wins them the title.
Gav, I'm going to come to you on a topic that I'm glad I'm coming to you on, and I've done it on purpose. Gav on the cans needs to be the person answering this question. And
now, right, go on.
Oh, mate, Gary Neville, Monday Night Football, oh, right?
Yes. All right, I'm up for it now. Go on.
So, a lot of people, a lot of Liverpool fans were watching Monday Night Football, West Ham versus Leicester, and it was the Monday Night Football where we have Cara and Gary Neville giving their predictions for the season. Mm-hmm. Before we even get to the predictions of the season, Gary Neville, and if you'd be so kind, Gav, to pull up the graphic that we prepared in advance, he pulled up this graphic, and I'm going to give my little 2 pence worth, but I'm not going to steal your thunder because you'd be way better placed to say this than me, right? Gary Neville seems to lose the run of himself when he's talking about his mate Ollie, and he tried to use this graphic as, I am guessing, a reason why people should give Ollie some time or cut him some slack. And he's trying to compare points per game rank, Premier League games, full seasons, all of the stats you can see at the top of the graphic. And then we get to the bottom of the graphic. And at the bottom of the graphic, you can see the net spend between the two managers, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, 314 million, Jurgen Klopp, 30 million in profits. I want to get your opinion on Gary Neville's failed attempts to try and do his mate a solid and actually making not only himself, in my opinion, but also Solskjaer look immeasurably worse off the back of it.
Oh, he absolutely has. Himself and the likes of Ferdinand are dying on this hill, and they will die on that hill until it happens and Solskjaer is no longer at the club. The funny thing about that graphic for me is that if you went back to 2015 to 2018, and ask Gary Neville to talk about Liverpool, he'd tell you they were nothing to Manchester United. You know, weren't in Manchester United's league. You know, United weren't great at the time. Liverpool, off the back of, from 2015 to 2018, were building something. But he'd be patronising to Liverpool, you know. United of this, United of that. United have higher standards than Liverpool. And he wouldn't be, he would, if you showed him that record back in 2018, I'm sure he would have had a right go at Jurgen Klopp over it. You know, and lashed it, and standards at United are better. And now he's using that for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to go, look, there's a standard of Klopp, when he probably was fucking giving out about Klopp and Liverpool and putting them down and patting them on the head. And here's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's not quite as good, but, you know, give him a break. Monday night, I don't watch this stuff. So I watched a lot of clips and my jaw was on the floor watching it, right? Because I couldn't believe what was coming out of his mouth. And he's going on about United should spend another fucking 300 million. United should go and sign Harry Kane. Now, this is the guy that told you that money was ruining football six months ago, whenever the whole European Super League thing happened. And
the self-proclaimed saviour of football, Gary Neville.
Remember, he's the one that actually said on the day of the Leeds-Liverpool game, why don't Leeds just not play the game because Liverpool don't want competition? And he's now encouraging Manchester United to spend way beyond their means, because they have a debt. They're running up a debt of about £500 million at the minute, right? Beyond their means to cut out any competition in the league. Not do it right. Just throw loads more money at it. Just throw loads more money at it. While he's against a load of money over on this thing, because Sky wouldn't have got the rights to the European Super League. That crowd in Canada would have got it. So, look, you have to respect what Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher done in the game. Carragher had him on toast, by the way, and it doesn't often happen, I have to say that, but he had him on toast on Monday night. You have to respect what he'd done in the game. They're probably the two most high-profile pundits in the game, but Monday night was an absolute and utter shambles from Sky and Monday Night Football. I couldn't believe it, Jamie. I really couldn't, because £340 million, right? And £1 billion since Alex Ferguson's left the club. Yeah. And what's their answer?
Spend 150 million.
It's a rebuild. We're in transition.
No, it's spend more money. That's what the thing is, right?
Yeah.
It's spend more money. And you know what? I half think he was trying to store United fans up with that by saying, why don't you go and get Harry Kane? Because he knows for an absolute fact, right, that he'd done an interview. He knows because he was there that he'd done an interview with Harry Kane. Okay. He does an interview with Harry Kane. Harry Kane in the interview says he thinks he should leave Spurs 100 million, blah, 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 blah. Man City are the only ones that are going to do it. They're the only ones that are going to do it. And Gary Neville turns around and says, we should go and sign Harry Kane. That's him trying to store United fans up again against the owners and saying, yeah, why don't we sign Harry Kane? Well, these fellas are taking all this money out. If we didn't take this, if they didn't take this money out, we'd be able to sign Harry Kane. You know what I mean? He's a hypocrite. That's basically what he is. He's a hypocrite. And, you know, he'll tell you one thing and then he'll go and do the other. And look, my respect for Gary Neville in a footballing sense and what he's done in the game is quite high. You know, when he talks 90% of the time, I would listen because I think he does talk sense. But when you put him into a United, into that United arena, he completely and utterly loses it for me. And he gets too emotional over it. And it's kind of like, you can really see a panic in him. You know, where he can dissect, really coldly dissect other clubs and other players and other managers. But when it comes to United, it's like he's dying on a hill on one side and he's trying to keep a fan base for me on the other. So it's a really big juggling act for him. And he doesn't quite work for him at times. It doesn't quite work for him. But look, it was entertaining. I'll give you that. It was entertaining. But I don't know where the defence comes from. It's nearly like they're setting up for, we jumped ahead of ourselves 7 days ago when we beat Leeds. And now we drew with Southampton. And now what do we do if we don't
actually win Leeds 6-2 last season?
Yeah, but what do we do if we don't win this league? We're going to have to start putting in some sort of insurance policies here. And look, it was madness. It was absolute madness. To compare Klopp and what he took over to Solskjaer and what he took over and to spend, I might as well be fucking comparing myself to Jamie as a centre midfielder, like it's fucking chalk and cheese. You know the sort of way. So it's one of those, Jamie. But if he doesn't regret it, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't regret Monday and he told his missus to knock that off series link and delete it as quick as possible.
So now I'm going to be awkward, right? And we're going to do our own version of Monday Night Football now, and we're going to go around the room and we're going to get our predictions. So predictions for top four. We're going to get predictions for top scorer, and then we've all picked one player to watch for the season. So, Gav, I'm going to come to you last because you've obviously just told us your thoughts on Gary Neville. Conroy, I'm going to come to you first, mate. Who is your top four pick? And then if you could give us your top scorer.
Right, so I hate when people say my head or my heart. I hate that pish. Right, I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say, Gav made a good point last week. He said, see if the transfer window closes right now, thinks Liverpool can win it. I'm not quite on that hill yet because I feel like, as I say, football fans were all reactionary. Burnley, Norwich, great. However, there was times last season where we didn't play well, didn't get in the game quickly enough, and then it was panic stations. And the fans coming back, yes, it's brilliant, it's amazing, but let's not lie, fans get frustrated as well, and that can have its own effect. And I do feel like there'll be a few games where I need to see that they can, a bit like when they won the league, they can overcome that. Because at times, just you can't play well every game. It's not going to happen. And you need that sometimes a bit of individual brilliance to get over the line. So at the moment, I do think it'll be City. I just think City have just got this way of just beating the teams they need to beat to win the league. As soon as they lost to Spurs, doesn't matter. That'll be like water off a duck's back. They smash Norwich. They'll probably win next week. They'll beat Arsenal quite comfortably. And that's just what they do. So at the moment, I was quite close with it, but I'm going to go for City first, Liverpool second, because I do think Chelsea have a good season. And I think actually we'll learn a lot on Saturday because of we've seen what Lukaku done to Arsenal. But as you said, having Van Dijk and Matip and Fabinho, you're going to see, and I'm a fan of Lukaku, by the way, but you're going to see how good, and that's going to be a very interesting battle. So Chelsea third for me, and then United I was close to saying Leicester, but actually having seen West Ham do that other night, and I know it's only just one game, I think United with Varane and Sancho and also Cavani will still be there for the season. I think they'll finish fourth. So that's my top four, Jamie. My top scorer, stuck with this one. I'm actually going to say, I'm going to go for Lukaku. It was between Lukaku and Salah, but I do think Lukaku, a bit like we said, the teams who maybe aren't top quality, he will score a lot of goals because he is a very, very good striker.
Can I just say before I come to Phil's predictions, I am absolutely loving the optimism in the chat. The amount of people that have put Liverpool first, tip of the hat to every single one of you.
I thought we used to be the pessimist.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Phil, what's yours?
I think I've picked the same as Conroy. I'm thinking City are still the team to beat. I said it last week. City, with Pep Guardiola and the resources they have, should be winning the league every season. If they don't, then it's a sign of a great team that can stop them. So the fact that Liverpool stopped them once and brought them to the final day of the season, another season, just shows how good this Liverpool team is. And that's why if Liverpool get back to those levels, they're definitely going to be in the mix. But I would still just, at the moment, be leaning towards City because I still am apprehensive about what lies ahead. What happens if certain players are missing for Liverpool? Have they got the players that can come in and fill the job? Now, I don't think the squad is as threadbare as some people think. I think there is a bit of depth in the Liverpool squad, but it's just certain players that if they're not there, then it'll be an uncomfortable watch. I think Chelsea, obviously, I expect to be challenging. So I'd go for them third and then Manchester United. But I think it will be a lot closer. I think even United finishing fourth will be a lot closer to whoever wins the title this season. I would go with Lukaku just because, as top scorer, because, yeah, he'll just, you saw the other day what he'll do against defences that he can boss. He'll just bang in goals. And the player I was kind of in between two players. I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen with Ferran Torres. Can Pep make something out of him? But I'm actually thinking Kai Havertz because obviously Chelsea paid a lot of money for this lad. Got COVID, no fans. People almost said, geez, he's a bit of a flop. That's just the way modern football is now. If you have six bad games, you're written off. But he got his form together towards the end of the season. Obviously scored the winning goal in the Champions League. Saw him the other day against Arsenal. Some of his touches, he's just one of those mercurial players where he just finds space. He's a really technical player. The only thing you need to see, you just need maybe a bit more aggression in him where he's a bit too nice. But as he matures and I suppose the competition and that Chelsea team, he'll know that he has to perform week in, week out. So I think I'm looking forward to seeing what he brings.
Gav, you had a brilliant stat. And Conroy, I'll come back to you for your one to watch in a minute. Gav, you had a brilliant stat that you pulled up on Kai Havertz that blew my mind, where we were comparing Michael Ballack's numbers to Kai Havertz's numbers. And the amount of goals that he scored in comparison to Michael Ballack, career numbers, 315 games, 66 goals, 24 assists. Havertz, 140 games, 43 goals, 28 assists. Like, that's some return for a player that's arguably yet to find his feet. Gav, you want to jump in?
That's a mad stat. I don't even know if that's true. I found it on the internet. But when I read it, I was like, wow, if that's true, I'm putting it up there. If people tell me it's wrong, what can I do? It's 11 o'clock at night. I can't change it now. But if it is true, he's got serious, serious numbers. But you know what? I'm not having it. I'm not having it from these two pricks tonight. I'm sorry. Liverpool to win the league.
I thought you were talking about Ballack and Havertz.
No, we get back to him in a minute. I'm too annoyed at fucking Philip and Conroy here. Liverpool are winning the league and I'm not having far about anything else. And this is why. City have signed one player and I don't think they've signed the player they need. All right? And I think United have signed two players and I think one of them is not what they need. I think Sancho's a really, really good player, but they need a dominating midfielder and they don't have it. All right. And I think if you put up to United, you can beat them. And I think you'll see that a bit this season with mid-ranking sides. I was going to say Arsenal there. Fucking hell, no.
No, they're in Chelsea
are strong. I think they have a big belief in what they've done, especially with, you know, Tuchel coming halfway through the season and going and winning Champions League. And they win a Champions League, but before that, you know, they nearly make a mess of the league by beating that Villa, I think, on the last day of the season. I think they were just lucky that, I think, Spurs win away at Leicester on the same day. I look at it and I don't think enough is being put on the players that have come back for Liverpool. I really, really don't. You know, we're literally, like we said it earlier, we were literally like the 21 different centre-back partnerships for Liverpool last season, I think it was, right? And no offence, but we're Reece Williams and Nat Phillips played a centre-back at Old Trafford last season. Do you know what I'm saying? And then you have Van Dijk back, you have Gomez back, Kanate's come in, Matip is fit across everything, he's fit. Thiago's got a good run under his belt towards the back end of last season. You know, Jota had an injury, but he's back. Mane's put that season behind him, hopefully. You've got Salah, who's great. Firmino, I think he's being, like I said, I think he's being managed. You know, Henderson's would be back and fighting for being, just so many players back. And not only that, they're back and they're, it's a squad that know each other inside out, know what they have to do for each other. So for me, and I said it to Conroy on the show last night, we done on his channel, starting now in Liverpool, I win the title. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. I don't care what anyone says. Now, I could be wrong, but for me, 100% Liverpool are winning this title if you start it tomorrow. Now, things may change in the next 6 days with regards to, but I don't know if United are going to do anything else. I don't know if Chelsea are going to do anything else. I think City will. I think City will bring in one attacker and that might swing it back in their favour. But right now, Liverpool for me for the title, and Mo Salah to be top scorer, by the way, 100%. Because that bottler, Kane, you know, he can't even get a transfer over the line. So I don't expect him to be a top scorer. And Mo Salah to be top scorer in Liverpool to win the league. That's all I'm saying.
And you're 2-3-4.
Irrelevant.
After that, Gav, I'm ready to put my shin pads on and start doing knee slides out the front. Yeah, I'll be honest.
I'm
going to
start tackling the internal doors here. 2 City, 3 Chelsea, 4 United. I'd be amazed if they aren't the top 4 in any order come the end of the season. Amazed. Because I don't think there's enough there. Don't give me Leicester. Will you stop it? You know what I mean? Fucking sick talking about them. They've done it twice now. You know, 2 years ago it was 19 points in 23 games and they're flying. They were second in the league, or was it second in the league for a while, and ended up finishing fifth. You know, they were right on United's tail anyway, and ended up finishing fifth. So I think I'd be absolutely flabbergasted if them four aren't top four in any particular order come the end of the season.
And you want to watch?
I've lovely stats for all these fuckers and yes, I'm just throwing them at me now. The one to watch, yeah, I went with I can't even remember who I went with now, Jamie. I went with this guy, Mason Greenwood of United. I think he's a fantastic footballer. There's a stat there before turning 19 about how many minutes he's played, minutes per goal involvement. I think he's a very, very good player, and that's why the Sancho stuff, although as good as Sancho is, I kind of don't understand it. I think Greenwood is such a talent, and he's quick, he's strong, he's skillful, he has vision, you know, and he's a killer. You put him in front of goal most times, he's a killer, and I think he's really good for United. You know, Martial, I don't think he'll do enough. I think Greenwood will be a massive, massive player for Manchester.
Do you think they'll play him through the middle, Gav? Do you think maybe that's why they've got Sancho? They're maybe looking to put Greenwood through the middle after Cavani leaves.
They could, and Cavani only has a year there, and Martial doesn't pull up any trees.
I do like
Rashford off the left hand side. I think he's more of a creative player than a killer, in Rashford. Yeah. And you know, when I look at Rashford, I think I'm always more worried about Rashford if you're telling me he's playing down the left-hand side than he is up front. I think he's just that sort of player. I think he's explosive. Yeah. I think he has got vision. He's a good shot on him. You know, I like him, Rashford. when I look at this Greenwood fella, every time I look at him play, I think he's a serious player.
He's a killer. You can see it. He's ruthless.
Yeah, he's a serious player.
So before we move on to the Liverpool Chelsea game and predictions on lineups and how we think,
can I just add one to watch? That's all right, Jim.
I haven't forgotten, mate. Go on, take the floor. You'll not be surprised to know that this is a Scottish player, mate. I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. I'm shocked.
No, see, in all seriousness, though, right, this is more preparation for the Liverpool Norwich game. I'm telling you right now, the kid went down to Wembley, absolutely smashed it. Declan Rice being quoted at 100 million. Calvin Phillips, Billy Gilmore, best player in the park, man of the match. That's all I'm saying. All joking aside, I think it'll be really good to see him get consistent games, because there's a mad stat on top of Gav's. I think his first four games in the competition, he got a man of the match. I think it was like in four competitions, he got a man of the match. Mm. So it's going to be really good to see him take away Liverpool and City, because that's kind of can't really judge much in that. And he was decent against Liverpool, but I feel like to see him in a full season will be really good for him. I do feel like Chelsea, I don't know if I'm the only one who sees it this way, if you disagree, but for me, they're just prepping Billy Gilmore. Like, he will not get sold on. For me, no. Gilmore will replace Jorginho or Kovacic in a couple of years, or even maybe next year. Maybe that's a bit too soon. But he's honestly outstanding, and he's actually could be very big for Scotland, to be honest, because you can actually build a team around him. And yeah, I know it's a bit obvious for me going for Scottish. That's me have a Andy Robertson loving and now a Billy Gilmore. But genuinely, the kid is special. And I think even Grizz would agree with that, to be fair.
Is there a worry with Gilmore playing for Norwich that he's not going to get enough of the ball? That he's going to be just looking at the ball being zipped around them? Because I know they like to play football, Norwich, but they're just not good enough.
No, it's a fair point, Phil, but I feel like you're at least going to get see with a Norwich, you're better to try it with a team like a Norwich or a Bournemouth in previous years, or even like a Brentford, where they'll at least try. So you'll be playing actual consistent games. And it might be to the opposite effect, Phil. It might be a case of, I don't know about you, but you know, academy players, there's certain players who've just went from strength to strength and never really had many knockbacks. But it might be good for him as a footballer to have a team who's not a top team, and he has to actually learn what it's like to scrap a win or get a lose, show him a different side to him. I just feel like overall, Phil, whatever way it goes, a full season is going to be really good for him. Consistent games. I think this is Gary Neville, quote actually. I think he says, you're not really a established footballer until you've played 200 games under your belt. So I think overall, either way that might happen, Phil, he might lose a lot. I think it'll be good for him as a player. And I'm going to watch him.
He looks like a serious player.
He does look like a serious player, but I would have, I know where you're coming from. I think he's highly rated at Chelsea, and people in the chat are thinking he might be moved on, and some others are thinking he's top class. I would have, if I was Chelsea, I'd be putting him into a, no offence to Norwich, but a little bit of a higher ranking side, if you know what I mean. Someone a bit more seasoned in the Premier League, where they know how to play the game in the Premier League. And because I think Norwich are one of the most naive sides you've ever seen in the Premier League 2 years ago. And in fairness, you play Liverpool and City the first two games, would be interesting over the next.
Yeah, I can't really judge right now.
Yeah, it'd be interesting over the next five or six if they've learned, or if they still are naive under Farc, isn't it? That's the manager there. But I was a bit surprised that you didn't see Gilmore, because any time I've seen him play, I thought he was brilliant against Liverpool when he played against him. And I was a bit surprised that he didn't go for someone, say like a Southampton, you know, just a little bit higher of a ranking, where, like Phil says, instead of chasing the ball around, Southampton know how to get a foothold in a game, regardless of who it's against. They know to get a foothold in a game, and that's where Gilmore might prosper. But I agree with you. Anytime I've seen him, I've been really, really impressed with him.
Yeah,
so we're going to move on to Chelsea. So I'll give you my top four very quickly. I am very much on the Gav way of thinking.
Yeah, this is, that's because me and you are on the drink and they're not.
Exactly.
Phil, drinking loads of cans and going to work at 5:30 in the morning, nothing doing about it.
Look, if Liverpool win the league, we'll all be drinking cans together.
Yeah. Where are we drinking them? That's the main part. That's the main thing.
Liverpool are going to win the league. I think that I understand fans clamour for new signings. I think Liverpool could benefit from one or two through the door. But I think a lot of people, including pundits, including opposition fans, massively underestimate the quality of this Liverpool squad. The quality of this Liverpool squad that is now back together, having gone through pretty much two seasons, smashing everybody. this is the same Liverpool team, and we've added additional quality. So this is an evolution of the Liverpool team. You're seeing the impact that Jota can have. You haven't even seen Thiago with the first choice midfield yet. You've got four quality centre-backs that we're going to be able to rotate. I think we're going to see Jurgen Klopp rotate the team more. I don't think he's going to rely on that standard 11. I think you're going to see the spine stay pretty consistent. But the one thing that this Liverpool team have got is a point to prove. Klopp loves being the underdog. Liverpool love being the underdog, and everybody has written us off. We couldn't be more primed and ready to smash everybody that comes in our way. And it's going to be a big game on Saturday, and I think Liverpool are going to lay a marker, and everybody's going to sit up and take notice. So I am fully, fully behind Liverpool winning the league, going all the way in the Champions League. I think Liverpool have got enough to challenge on all fronts. And that's not just the wine talk. And if you ask me at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'll say the same thing. So Liverpool to win the league. Number two, Manchester City. Number three, I'm going to go Manchester United. And I'm going to go Chelsea, number four. Top scorer, Mo Salah. And my one to watch to complete everything Liverpool is Harvey Elliott. So you can accuse me of having my rose-tinted glasses on. You're dead right, I have. Harvey Elliott, I think he's got the world at his feet. An 18-year-old lad that's come in for his first Premier League start against horrible opposition, a team of yard dogs that are looking to boot him all over the pitch. He was the most fouled player, but you know what he did? He got back up. He got on the ball. I think he made the most final third passes out of anybody on the pitch. His composure, his ability to go both ways. I don't want to say it because it'll probably get clipped and people will throw this at me. He's got a little bit of the Philip Coutinho's about him in that he can excel in the half space. He picks up pockets where players don't want to follow him. And he backs himself. He really backs himself. And Phil, we spoke about it in the week. There was an interview that he did on BT Sport with one of his old coaches at QPR, I think it was. And Fulham. Fulham. The humility of the fella, and he just wants to get better. He's happy to play any position, and he just wants to develop. So he really does have the world at his feet. Now, I want to move on to the Chelsea game because I'll come to you first, Phil. You know, a lot of people are saying Liverpool need to sign players. I wouldn't like to be Jurgen Klopp picking a starting 11 for that Chelsea game, because there's a lot of players that are going to be staking a claim, you know, particularly in midfield. There's some big names that are looking to come back. You know, there's obviously the competition between Firmino and Jota that we spoke about at the start of the show. It's not going to be easy for Klopp to pick that team.
No, that is the team that's the only change I would make with that team. As I said earlier on, I would probably go Firmino to start instead of Jota. But like Gav alluded, if Jota starts, I'm not going to be outraged. I'm going to be thinking, well, Firmino will be in reserve, and obviously Jota will test Chelsea in other ways. And look, Liverpool will find a way of getting to Jorginho, and they'll find a way of getting at that Chelsea defence. So I wouldn't it wouldn't worry me. I think Robertson comes back in, and like, what a boost that was to see him on the bench last weekend. Great to see Tsimikas play well, because I talked about him at the Norwich game where he faded a bit, but I thought he was brilliant last week. And obviously the little cameo or the little passage of play where he was just running into people and, you know, got a standing ovation as he came off. And something I said after the Norwich game where he made mistakes, but you could see he was pissed off at himself, where he was angry. And he obviously went into the game last week against Burnley and said, I'm not going to make those mistakes again. And obviously sets up the first goal. He had a great game. And it just, you know what? It just means that if Robertson needs to be taken out of the team at certain stages of the season, you feel a bit more comfortable now that Tsimikas, again, a Greek international, had COVID, moved to a new country, new league. People just thought, this guy, he's not going to work out. Another player written off, like so many of them written off last season. And I said last season was a freak season in terms of what was happening. So I think Robertson comes back in. I think Keita deserves a place in the team just in that role. Look, we've been talking about him playing very similar way to Gino Wijnaldum. It's so funny watching the reaction of Liverpool fans after a game, because it's so mixed on Keita. Some people were saying, yeah, Keita was brilliant again. You get other people saying, I don't know what game you're watching. So Keita is going to be that player. He's going to be that divisive player for Liverpool, where he Some fans love him, some don't. Again, look, it's his fourth season. I know Liverpool fans expected him to hit the ground running, considering how much money they paid for him. And also the fact that they waited. They said Leipzig, he can have him. And we're going to wait. And he comes in. Obviously, he's been injured all the time. So I think they're the two calls. Who starts up front and who starts in the midfield three? I think Henderson and Fabinho have to start. So for me, there's two places up for grabs.
Conroy, you made a comment before we came, before we went live. It was about whether Fabinho would come back in. And I think Phil's right. That's where maybe some of the tough decisions are in midfield. For me, I think, and I said it before we came on, Fabinho is a must. Reason being, if you look at the Arsenal game, you know, they failed miserably to cut off the supply line into Lukaku's feet. I think Fabinho is one of the world's best at shielding that defence. So I think he's a must. I think for me, the conversation is whether Naby Keita stays and keeps his place in the side or Thiago comes in. Where do you sit on that? And can I just say, I love the fact that Gav went to get an extra can before we finish on winners and losers. I absolutely love that, Gav. I know exactly what you do.
It's my favourite part of the week. Phil's going to get about an hour, half an hour sleep before he goes to work. It's going to be great.
So, Conroy, who starts in the midfield three for you?
It's got me thinking. Fabinho, for me, as Phil said before we came on as well, it's Chelsea. It's a massive game. If it was maybe a different team, maybe a different story. I think Fab starts. I think it will be it'll be Henderson, and then I'm assuming it'll be Keita. But I've got to ask, because I know you're a big Thiago fan as well as I am, Jamie. Do you think maybe Thiago might sneak in that team at the weekend?
It's a difficult one. I think if you said to me, what's our best midfield three, it's Thiago, Henderson and Fabinho. If you look at how Thiago played when he came on, he did a slinky run. He basically sold three players and then played a killer pass. But then he made, and I'm going to say it, there was two sloppy passes. One of them wasn't his fault. One was a header that fell between, I think it was Henderson and a centre-back, or Henderson and a full-back. And the two of them just looked at the ball and neither of them went for it. So I'm going to say he made one poor pass, which nearly gave him a goal. If I'm a betting man now, I think Naby Keita gets the nod for this game. If you say to me, who do I think is our best midfield three when all fit are firing, it's Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago. But if I'm picking the team tomorrow, I'd probably just give Naby Keita the nod.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. And you didn't ask me for my front three, did you, Jamie? So
no, not yet. No, you can go for that, mate. Go on, tell us your front three.
I've got to be honest, Phil, before I was 100% in Jota's camp, but when you raised that point about Jorginho, it did get me thinking about, as we've done the stream, I've been thinking in my head, it's a bit like, do we want to worry about them? But that's silly to think like that, because you obviously have to give respect to Chelsea. But the thing with Jota, as one of the comments said earlier, I think it's a bit disrespectful to say he's not involved in the game. But for me, he doesn't really overthink things. I think last season, even the season before, we've got our front three, they definitely got a bit, you know, in their head when it came to finishing. Maybe you'd say Salah's never been like that, but definitely Mane and Firmino. But Jota, I just think he's so effective. Like, I don't think he overthinks things. I think he just seems to do stuff, and before you know it, 1-0 up. It's such a hard one for me, but I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with it before the stream. I think Jota, just because, as I said, actually with the Norwich game, when a guy's playing that well and he's scored another goal, can you really drop him? I don't know if it works for me. I think he's in a good running form now, and he'll keep Jota up front. But I fully agree with what Phil's saying. I think the Firmino-Jorginho debate's interesting. That might come into play as well.
Gav,
yeah.
Any note? Because I know you're dying to get to winners and losers, so we'll keep this brief, right? any surprising changes for you in your starting 11? And then I'll just go quickly around the room to get a prediction.
No, I've put that lineup on the screen now. Is where I go. I think Robertson will come back in simply because of it. You know, nothing on Tsimikas. I think just because of his experience in the big games. He knows what this means. He knows Chelsea, you know, and he was chomping at the bit to play against Burnley, but it was probably a day early, as he said himself. Fabinho, all things being okay, definitely comes in because he's going to be absolutely huge in this game for me. I don't think Thiago makes it into the side. I think he's being managed as well. He had a slight knock and, you know, we have enough to cover him there. Why risk it? So I think Fabinho protecting Henderson's work rate and Keita's work rate, in fairness to him, and that little, and we talk about Firmino maybe starting and putting pressure on Jorginho, but I think that might be Keita's job as well, because Keita is a fucking ridiculous presser and he just nicks it. If he nicks it with them three boys up front against what will look like probably three Chelsea centre-backs, anything could happen. So I think that one on screen, I think, is more or less where I would go at the moment. And I'm comfortable with it. I'm at a stage now where I go, you know what, we're arguing over Thiago or Keita, we're arguing over Firmino or Jota, you know, could Konate come in instead of Matip? Could Simicat? And great arguments to have. Great arguments to have.
Especially for a team with no squad depth, as everybody keeps telling us
literally 10 players we have.
Predictions. Gav, I'll stay with you. Score?
I said it at full time against Burnley, 2-1 to Liverpool.
Any particular scorers?
Salah and Jota.
Phil?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking 2-1. Like, 1-1 is the safe one, but I just have a feeling Liverpool are going to score from a set piece. I think I'd love to see if do you know what? Like, for the size of him, he should actually be scoring more. Now, here's one for you. What do you think of the corners, the way they take them, in terms of they're always outswingers?
Hate it.
But think back to the biggest goal we scored last season. The most iconic goal we scored last season. Alisson's header was an in-swinger from Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I know why they hit out-swingers. I mean, especially, you know, you're looking at the size of Edouard Mendy. You know, if you hit an in-swinger and you don't get it right, he just comes out and catches it. And then you're frustrated and you're throwing your hands in the air going, well, that was a waste. But sometimes I'd just like to see one just absolutely fizzed in, whipped in, and I'd like to see Van Dijk. But the beauty of Van Dijk going up as well is Matip gets more space because everyone's afraid of Van Dijk. So maybe one of the two lads could score one. And do you know what? Then Danny Murphy will have to talk about the set piece coaches, you know?
Don't get me started.
Danny Murphy's a joke, isn't he?
Gav, can you just pull up the comment there from Veranda Cheese? Makes a comment.
Yeah, but hold on. I will put it up, and can I caveat with this, right?
Oh, go on.
Veranda Cheese is a guy I know, right? And he's wound me up the other night, and he's trying to do the same again, but I'm going to put it up anyway. Because he says, a lot of viewers of this pod eating your words over Slayton and Naby and last year and over the summer, and he's proving he's all wrong now. He's just a wind up. I know he's winding us up, but. Do you know what? I'm glad he put it up because I'm actually proved 100% right on Naby Keita. 100% right. I told you he had all the tools to be a brilliant Liverpool player. It was reliability that was killing him. And if his reliability goes up significantly this season, he'll show you the tools he has. But thanks, Neil, for that. Why don't you use your real name, Neil?
Love it, Gav. Conroy, predictions?
The usual one I go for, but I think it could be 1-0 Sadio Mane goal. I was going to say Joe Matip for a corner, but I think I'll just say Sadio Mane 1-0 Liverpool. I think we actually, hopefully, I feel we'll boss. I do think Lukaku's a threat. I'm not going to down the player, but I do feel, as you said, Keita, Henderson, Fabinho, and then Matip and Big Virg. I feel like it's going to be a great battle, but I think we'll come out on top. So 1-0 Sadio Mane.
I think, for what it's worth, 2-0. I think we will keep a clean sheet. I feel like we will be like a pack of rabid dogs, and you will hear Anfield in full voice. I think we'll swarm them. We won't give them a second, and they'll feel the full power of Anfield come Saturday, and I cannot wait. Now, Gav, you're ready. You're ready, mate. Your favourite time of the week. You're giddy.
Yeah, I love it.
So, like we did last week, so we debuted our winners and losers of the week.
We have to be quick, you know, because Phil needs to go to bed.
I know. I'm very mindful of the fact that you have to
start watching Love Island from the start again.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've not got Love Island now, so I'm here all night. But
reunion's happening next week, is it not, Jamie? You get the reunion.
Oh, it is. I've got that. Yeah, so I still get one more to go. But yeah, I'm mindful of the fact that Phil's up early, right? And I wanted to give this more time.
Mm-hmm. We have to
look after you, because you know it's proper practice in a work environment that you have a certain amount of hours sleep before you go to work, right? Yeah, you can't have like an hour sleep between two shifts apparently, but we should do another podcast on this. Literally,
we should
call it Winners and Losers.
We
and
should
rant about people for like 2 hours. It'd be great crack.
We should. Like, I think we gave it 10 minutes last week. And to be honest, we should have just... I actually thought when writing the agenda, do I put this first? But then I thought to myself, we won't talk about anything else. This will literally be 30, 40 minutes. Yeah. But right, so the general gist for those that didn't see last week, everybody on the show will give us their winners and losers of game week 2 in the Premier League. It can be players, refs, managers, fans, anything they want. And I'm good because he's smiling and he can't wait to get it out. I'm going to come to Gav first. You can start with your winner or loser, Gav. It's totally up
winners.
To you.
Winners are Leeds United fans, because they finally got into a ground to watch the team in the Premier League. I'm not like, I know Joe Wayman's is a massive, massive Leeds fan that comes onto this show every so often. He's a top fella, and you know, I think I've softened towards Leeds because of Joe. And I'm being honest with you, with the build up to that game at the weekend against Everton and Leeds being in the Premier League and being able to actually put fans in the ground, I was delighted for Joe in particular. But, you know, the Leeds fans were brilliant at the weekend, and I think they're the winners of the weekend after 16. It should have been 16, and it's 17, I think, full ground for the first time in 17 years. Yeah, Leeds are definitely the winners.
And you're losers of the
Arsenal Football Club. Like it's getting beyond a joke now. You know, I've seen that they're being linked now with owners that are going to buy them from Qatar or Saudi Arabia or something like that. For fuck's sake. And you know what? I watched the game on Sunday and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. Like, and you know what? I doubled down afterwards because Arteta said this is a long term project. That, you know, it'll take time and we won't see the effect straight away. And I went, mate, just stick somebody in the middle of midfield that's going to defend your back four and you have a great chance. And I'll tell you how bad it got for Arsenal. In injury time in the first half, right, the commentator said, Arsenal have done quite well in the first 5 minutes of this half. Yeah. And okay in the last 5 minutes of this half. But in between, it's all been Chelsea. And I thought, that's a fucking disgrace. That's a disgrace. Like, I'd literally lose my mind if Liverpool played Chelsea at home and they were good for the first five and the last five at home on the second game of the season. Now, we're playing Chelsea at home at this game of the season and we could lose it on Saturday. We could, but we're not going to be like we are there. It's all over the shop, Jamie. And I get a project and I get, you know, even if you want to go with that and it's a project and it's a long-term thing, but surely as, you know, pupil of the game and you're playing Romelu Lukaku, you do the simple thing and you put a defensive midfield and you say you stand on his toes, and if you stand on his toes, I'm willing to sacrifice other stuff around the pitch because we know he's being signed for everything to go through him. He's going to try hold everything up and he's going to have Mason Mount buzzing off him and he's going to have Jorginho looking to get the ball back off him and he's going to have Kovacic looking to get it and get it right to Reece James and Alonso him. And Kai Havertz is going to be running beyond them, and they've done none of that. And it was so fucking terrible to watch. It really, really was. Like that back four for Arsenal. When I seen it, I said to myself, I'd need to be going to the ticker office at Arsenal going, listen, are you doing swaps? You know what I mean? Are you doing swaps?
One time,
you know, the cash converters where you buy a game for your computer, and even though it's only a week old, you only get 50% for it when you go back. I literally taken half my money and walked home. You know, I really, really, really would. So, Arsenal Football Club are the losers yet again, and I hope to get beaten at the weekend so we can talk about this again next Wednesday.
Same time next week, Gav. Look forward to it.
Same cans.
Yeah. By the way, just to point out, Arsenal won 6-0 tonight.
Yeah. And, wow. And from what I can make out, Arteta was nice and smug afterwards, which was fantastic.
Yeah. In fairness, West Brom made 11 changes, so.
They're just getting used to what life in the Championship will be like.
No, it's not that bad. Yeah.
Go on, Phil. Who's your winners and losers?
Winner, Shane Duffy. Bit of a surprise when he was named in the Brighton team to start against Burnley in the first weekend, then scores against Watford at the weekend. And just, I'm so happy for him because he has had a shocking time on and off the pitch. He went to Celtic, you know, a boyhood Celtic fan. This was his dream move. You know, he'd been squeezed out of the Brighton team, but he said, I'll go to Celtic. And obviously, we know there was no fans there. Unfortunately, his father passed away, and he just couldn't keep it together. And this shows us that footballers are human. We think we see them do amazing things on the football pitch, and we think they're superhuman, but deep down they're human beings. And it just all got too much for him, and he came back to Brighton towards the end of last season when it didn't work out at Celtic. And just reading, he did an interview with the Brighton website there before the Watford game, and he just said, it feels like I'm back home. And there he is alongside Lewis Dunk, and when he scored his goal, I just thought, like, he's back. And could only be a good thing for Ireland as well, because when Stephen Kenny took over, a lot of people thought that could be the end of Shane Duffy. But it just shows that the guy has serious stones to come back. And yeah, I was delighted for him to score. And actually, you know, Brighton themselves could be in the winners category, because it's always thrown at them that they play lovely football, but they don't score enough goals. And, you know, they've started with 2 wins from 2. First time they've ever done that. And Graham Potter's beard deserves a mention as well. So that's the kind of winning package. Losers, like Gavin, going back to last week's loser. And I had
Steve Bruce. I forgot there was a bonus bit. Go on.
I kind of had Steve Bruce in mind, but I think he'll feature a few times before the end of the season. That's if he lasts. But Harry Kane today put out a tweet. Look at this. Incredible to see the reception from the Spurs fans on Sunday and to read some of the messages of support I've had in the last few weeks. I will be staying at Tottenham this summer. Now, those two words cracked me up. And will be 100% focused on helping the team achieve success. What success would that be, Harry? Would that be the Europa Conference League? Now, bear in mind, they're 1-0 down to Paco de Ferreira. They have that big game tomorrow to see can they turn it around and get to the group stage of the Europa Conference League. But Harry Kane has had to come back to Spurs with his tail firmly between his legs. And have you watched Spurs under Nuno? They are absolutely turgid to watch. It's basically Mourinho part 2 without the pantomime of Mourinho. Nuno played for Mourinho. He was part of that Porto squad that won the Champions League and the UEFA Cup. So he's obviously not as much of a mouthpiece as Mourinho, but they're so bad to watch. Harry Kane's probably going to be starved of the ball, and it's going to be a shit season for him. He could put on a brave face, but he'll be there meeting up with his England buddies, and Jack Grealish will be there going, oh, it's brilliant at City. You should have joined. And sorry, but
he's Harry, Jamaican, Phil, yeah?
Yeah, sorry. We'll put it down to a bad mic.
Hard to go with EastEnders.
But it's an absolute disaster from Harry Kane. You know, he backed himself to get a move away, and now he's still at Spurs. So I had to stick him in as the loser again.
Love stuff, Conroy.
For me, I was going to go with the easy one with Arsenal and Pablo Mari and just the full team, but I'm not going to do that. For me, I'll start with losers and end on the more positive note. It's actually quite hard because you just picked the top two, but I'm going to say Ayoze Perez for the challenge on, I forgot the West Ham player, that's terrible. I don't know if you saw it. Yeah, there's some people were debating it. For me, that's like, I get a bit annoyed sometimes when people say, oh, it's not intent. Honestly, just read the rule book for like the last 10 years. Intent's never been in there. Jamie Vardy against Stoke at Britannia got shoved like that. Studs were up, red card. Could have broke the guy's leg. So had to think there, he's my loser this week, because I don't know what they're arguing about. In my opinion, it's a clear red card, very dangerous.
Oh, it's
But this is the thing nowadays. People just want to question everything. And yeah, just the fact that people don't know that, rule. That annoys me. So that's the loser this week. A few honourable mentions for the winner. I'd say Antonio, but the comments said that getting being West Ham's record goal scorer in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Danny Ings with overhead kick, one of the best goals we've seen in the Premier League, probably goal of the season, outstanding. Imagine getting him for 30 million. It's almost like he was a bargain and someone should have went for him. But we'll not get into that. And my winner is going to be actually, believe it or not, the refs, again, for having take away the Liverpool Burnley, but the football right now, I'm not seeing stop and start. It looks very much like it was at the Euros. And the highlight of the week is probably Southampton's goal. And it's not just because it's United. That's, I don't know if you disagree, but for me, that's football's a contact sport. And that was a good refereeing. And I think overall, maybe the Burnley game is the exception, but it's another weekend where the games have been flowing and it's been great football. If you watched the Everton Leeds match, what a game. So that's my winners this week.
Yeah, I have to agree on the contact thing. You can see it, you know, I think it was actually the Jack Cork tackle on Harvey Elliott. It got the stadium up. It got the stadium, but it makes it electric. It can change the direction of a game. So I'm a big fan and I'm prepared to take a couple of big Burnley yard dogs throwing people on the floor if it means that overall the standard of referee and they let a lot more go.
Sorry to interrupt, Jamie, but the thing about it is what I like is, so see Fernandes, see how he falls to the floor there and doesn't get a free kick. What happened in the Euros after a few games is you look like an idiot if you're going down too easily and your team loses the ball in a good position. So therefore, I feel like you start to see that improve as well. You start to see players not falling down as much. So I think hopefully, overall, it'll be good for the season. Yeah, and it did work in the Euros, so hopefully it does work.
I think it will work across the board, apart from Bruno. I think Bruno will continue to do it no matter what. I think it's just
fucking hell when he is, isn't he?
He said Sean Dyche was a moaner. He said he was a winner.
But do you know what the funny thing about Bruno Fernandes is? I think he's a very good footballer. I think he's a really good footballer. I think he finds space, he scores goals, right, he gets penalties, and you know he gets penalties, but he converts them. I think he has good work rate for me in that United side. But when I see that clip of him running into the centre circle, and your man puts his hand out to just, you know, feel where he is, and he's down on the ground with the face, and he's rolling around, I'm kind of going, you're not helping yourself, but most of all, you're not helping your team. You know, how is it going to come to a stage where his teammates are going to go, will you ever fucking give over? Because it's not going to work for us anymore. And you're basically leaving us short in midfield now by doing this, you know, depending on where the ball is broken up. I can't get over that fella at times. I really can't. And it's not because he's a United fan. I've just talked up Mason Greenwood. So it's not as like I've a vendetta against Manchester United. But when I look at Bruno Fernandes and you look at him against Leeds, he gets a hat trick against Leeds and he was brilliant. And why do you keep hitting the ground? It's mad, but you'd be found out now because like you all said, that this minimal contact stuff has gone out the window now. They're letting contact go. And putting your hand across somebody and to feel where they are, it's going on in football donkey's years. You always put your hand out to feel where they are and see where they are. It's going on donkey's years. And for the last year to 18 months, football was fucking pantomime. And they're going back to where it should be while trying to integrate the VAR stuff, and it's worked well so far, and some players are going to be found out on it.
Phil, you wanted to jump in?
Harry Kane as well.
I love that Phil's just sat in the background just randomly shouting out Harry Kane at this stage.
It's like he's on a sedative. He's just sitting there randomly shouting with Harry Kane. We should the podcast where we pick winners and losers should be called We Hate Harry Kane.
I wouldn't be surprised if I shout Harry Kane's name in my sleep, to be honest. Yeah.
But listen, just don't do it when you're reporting on that Paralympics in the morning.
But you know when his little trick where he backs into players and he's gonna do some serious damage to someone. But my only worry is, I think it's great and it will get to the stage where the players are like, we can't do this anymore because the refs aren't having it. But then when they go off and play Champions League, it's going to be very frustrating because the refs will ping them for everything. If they sniff near someone, the ref will go, nah, you're too close, free kick. So it's going to be great for the Premier League, but it could be very frustrating for when you're watching Liverpool in the Champions League, and they're playing, they could be playing a Spanish team or an Italian team, and the referee's giving them everything against them, and it'll just wind everyone up.
I remember playing in a footy tour in Germany. We went over, quick story, and it was the first time I'd ever played with European refs, and like, I was a physical player, and like, every time I'd never come up against a diver, and like, you'd put a hand on them and they fall on the floor, and I was like, what's going on? And within 12 minutes I had a yellow card. And I think it was within about 20 minutes, the ref was like, look, I'm going to send you off here. And they had to sub me off 20 minutes into the game because I couldn't understand what was happening. I'd never seen anything like it. It was completely and utterly a game changer for me. But
Streetwise, that's what it is. Streetwise, Jamie.
Streetwise, yeah, exactly. Streetwise, Harry. My winners and losers, Gav.
Phil's love for Harry Kane is still a better love story than Toy. Like, go on, sorry.
Winners and losers. It's always hard going last because you always rob them. But my winner was Antonio. Unbelievable form. Seems like a really top fella. I can't get over the fact that he's now West Ham's leading Premier League goal scorer of all time, and considering he wasn't always playing as a striker, that's nuts. Go on, Phil.
We can't have that record. Like, he scored 49 Premier League goals. This is bananas. Like, remember Lukaku scored 60 goals for Everton and became their Premier League scorer. I was like, Dixie Dean used to score 60 a season. This is, I love the Premier League, but some of the stats, and look, I think Antonio was class, and if he stays fit, West Ham could have an even better season.
Yeah, brilliant season, yeah.
But he does pick up muscle injuries and hamstring injuries. But the Premier League record, I started looking at West Ham's leading scorers. Like, 49 goals doesn't even get him into, like, you know, he's not even getting near. You have to get more than 100 to get into the top 10.
Was it Decanio? Decanio was the previous.
Yeah, he was
record,
49. It was Decanio, yeah.
Yeah, but you have to remember, like, the Premier League's in since 92. I think West Ham have been relegated 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like you'll have a player there that there's probably four seasons out of the Premier League. I know it's gone 30 years, so it's a huge
Hold on, Gav. Sorry, one sec. We have someone in the comments whose name is We Hate Harry Kane.
Oh, no, that's Red Steve. He should change his name.
Oh, is it?
What a legend. There you go.
Brilliant.
That's Red Steve. He changed his name. Because I only know by the symbol.
Yeah, the logo, yeah.
But like, I know it's 30 years, so it's a huge sample size, but you will, you know yourself, a team goes down, the team breaks up, you know, and usually the best players, i.e. the forwards, move on. But I did think it was a bit strange one night, because I don't pay any attention to stats, lads, you know, I'm busy doing other stuff, but somebody said, you know, Antonio, West Ham's top scorer, and I was like, what? Where in their history? And I was like, hold on, Mikel Antonio is injured like fucking half a season every year. How is the fuck? And then I was like, surely Tony Cotty scored more, Pat Morley or someone like that. Yeah. And no, it turns out it's in the Premier League, so I calmed down a little bit then. But fair play to him, because I said we were saying on Conway's show last night, he's got a lot of injuries, but in fairness to him, he's persistent and he's got back. And over the last year for me in particular, he's been some games unplayable, you know, and when he gets his chance, he takes them. So fair play to him.
It started at right back as well. It started right back as well. Crazy position movement in his career.
Do you remember last season he didn't play at Anfield? And I remember when David Moyes said Mikel Antonio is not fit this weekend. Like, I remember
delighted.
Absolutely delighted. So that's the bit, like, that's the compliment that Liverpool fans, the biggest compliment they could pay to him, because he wasn't playing. It was like, this would be an easier game now because Matt Phillips was playing.
Yeah, it was. It was at the time where we were riddled with problems, and you're just thinking one player you don't want to come up against was him. Yeah. My loser, before we wrap up the show. So we covered Gary Neville. It would have been Gary Neville. But with the announcement, I think it was today actually, that the Champions League clubs playing on a Wednesday will now not play. Will not play in the early 12:30 kickoffs this season. My loser is Des Kelly.
Desmond Kelly. Lovely, I love it.
And anyone else?
This is a complete surprise to me, by the way.
No, but
I didn't
anyone
know
else? Like, can you remember how smug he was and how praised he was by the likes of Gary Lineker for standing up to Klopp and putting Klopp in his place?
This is the same fella on the pitch at Anfield after the Barcelona win, on the pitch at Anfield after in Madrid, wasn't he? After we won the European Cup, and the same fella on the pitch when we won a league title. And then as soon as he got a sniff, he tried to down Klopp. And I haven't seen him since, because it all came out that he was, you know, Klopp had lost his mother at the time and stuff like that. So I'm fucking delighted. That's the shout of the night, by the way. And I didn't know that was coming. I didn't read your losers earlier, and I'm thrilled with it.
I'm glad you're happy, mate. Yeah, it was the media pile on at the time. And to be fair, look, let's not just say it wasn't just Klopp, it was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer who came out as well and said exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
and this isn't just blinkered Liverpool talk. This is just common sense. You know, other teams I love the comments coming through here. I'm not going to read some of them out because they're quite choice, but I wholeheartedly agree with the sentiments in the chat on Des Kelly. But look, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said it the same thing. It's just a bit of common sense. And I think sometimes in football, there is a massive lack of common sense and people like to take pops at Klopp. But a lot of the time, the things that he says, once the dust settles and you take off your club blinkers, he's probably talking sense, and this just seems to be one of them. So anybody that tried to throw mud at Klopp, including you, Mr. Smug, Des Kelly, get in the bin. You are my loser of the week. So that is our winners and losers of the week.
It was a strange one, that, Jamie, as well. See, as Gav said, Des Kelly seemed to have a very good relationship with Liverpool before that.
He really did.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And Klopp as well, because Klopp, all jokes aside, after that, Klopp still spoke quite highly of him. So it was a strange one to pick your battles to go. You could have maybe mentioned it, but he went full.
He's seen his name up in Lloyds, Conroy. That's what he did. He's seen his name up in Lloyds when he got that opportunity.
He got some very intimate, like, close relationship interviews, and it just, to me, it was strange to risk it all for that, which backfired massively.
That could come from a producer, lads. That could be somebody. Oh, yeah, I know that.
100%. 100%, but he's the one doing it, so I'm blaming him. Unless you can find me the producer and we can have a chat with him, but I don't think we can.
Can I just say the comments of the night, if I just scroll back up, Emmett Kavanagh, Des Kelly needs to stick to selling carpets.
That's a real Irish thing, though. Yeah. I don't know who
is
get that.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Des Kelly, the carpet man, yeah.
Des Kelly is huge in Ireland for Des Kelly, the carpet man. He sells carpets around the floor and all that. Jingle, and the other famous one, of course, is Lionel Richie. Who's?
Oh, wow. No, it's not.
Yeah, Lionel Richie. And you know something? I remember a massive argument going on Facebook over this because somebody in England in the UK named a company Lionel Richie and was like, isn't this the best company name ever? And there was people from Ireland going, what? There's a fellow called Lionel Richie in Finglas.
What do you mean, people in Dublin, Ireland? You were deep in those comments.
I was so into it. I got banned and everything. But I was like, the original Lionel Richie is under the footbridge in Finglas Village, Lionel Richie. So there you go.
Lionel Richie, brilliant. Yeah. By the way, there seems to be a lot of comments coming through that we should basically make this its own show. So Gav, as the gaffer, that's one for you to think about, mate.
I'd love it. But the only thing I would say is that Phil has to have the next day off. And we all have to be on the cans because I feel like I'm running away myself here and you're all looking at me going, this fella's fucking weird.
No, totally fair. So what could go wrong? Winners and losers and we're all on the cans.
Yeah.
Right, with that.
Can we call it Lionel Richie hates Harry Kane?
You're the boss, mate. You can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We get some ideas on names and it'd be just the weirdest podcast ever.
Jesus, lads, it's 10 to 12. Sorry. Yeah.
Turn into a pumpkin.
Oh, no.
Yeah, sorry, Phil. Right, so we'll wrap up. With that, that's definitely enough from us. Gav, Phil, and Conroy, who seems to have disappeared.
He's back.
Is he?
Yeah, I got it back in now. Hold on one sec.
Thank you all for coming. I want to give a shout out to Sam Maguire, who's been doing a lot of work with us in the background on some of the analysis. If you don't know, I'm sure you all follow Sam. He has a Patreon page. You can subscribe to that for $3.99. You'll get all his articles, polls, a monthly Q&A. And if you want to go for the $5.99 offer, you get all of the above as well as video and special guest articles. So please do go check it out. Gav, what do we have coming up for the rest of the week?
I always forget what day it is. It's Wednesday.
You know, totally, I ask you this every week.
I know, and I know we do the show every single Wednesday, unless Liverpool play on a Wednesday. But no, tomorrow is Carnage. You have got Grizz, you have Avi. Yeah, Avi and Connor from the Friday Night Show are joining Grizz, along with the Chelsea fan. His name's going to be Hebrew. He's really, really good. I know he's been on a couple of times and his name's completely gone out of my head, but he's really, really good. Friday night is Connor and Avi with the Sports Unplugged. Saturday, we will have pre and post match shows around Chelsea. And we're back on Sunday with the Fatback Four. And don't forget Sienna Steps. Please go into the show description, buy a virtual ticket for Anfield for €1 or buy 10 of them, whatever you want. And also in there is the link to our GoFundMe. We're trying our best to get as much money as we can to try send her to America and St. Louis in November for life-changing treatment. And I was on Conroy's channel last night. Go and check it out. Conroy Talks. Go and check that out. We had a really good chat for about an hour and 40 minutes last night. There was no cans involved, so it's a lot more relaxed. But I spoke a lot more sense last night. But go and check that out. It was a really good chat. Go and subscribe to his channel too.
Absolutely. Massive thank you as always to everybody in the chat. Anybody has been sending us messages throughout the week, we really appreciate it. It has been fantastic to read how much people are enjoying the show, so please do keep the feedback coming. If you could, before you leave us a quick like on the video, let us know your thoughts on the show, your predictions for Chelsea, who's going to start, what's the score going to be. Leave them in the comments section below. So with that, I hope you've all enjoyed the show. Make sure you enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll be back with you again next Wednesday on the Midweek Fix. All the best.
Sports Social Podcast Network.